Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Ajijola et al. Titled, Sympathetic Modulation of Electrical Activation in Normal and Infarcted Myocardium, Implications for Arrhythmogenesis. This article published online January 13, 2017. Joining me today are consulting editor Crystal Ripplinger, lead author Olujimi Ajijola, and content expert Christian Meyer. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. And thanks to Olu and Christian for taking part in this discussion today. It's well known that sympathetic activity can have a profound effect on cardiac electrophysiology and can trigger ventricular arrhythmias and even sudden cardiac death. However, much of this evidence is still somewhat correlative, and the precise mechanisms by which sympathetic activity actually triggers the arrhythmia is still not well understood. There have been many investigations on the impact of sympathetic activity on ventricular electrophysiology, and these studies have been carried out both in vivo as well as in various ex vivo and decentralized preparations. But by and large, many of these previous studies have really focused on repolarization and how sympathetic stimulation modulates the action potential duration and the dispersion of repolarization. Much less attention has been given to the role of sympathetic activity in modulating activation and conduction. That is one of the reasons why the current study is so exciting. It reveals new data on how sympathetic activation modulates conduction, both in normal hearts and following myocardial infarction. Olu, can you briefly explain the rationale, methodology, and major findings of this study?
Absolutely. The temporal nature of ventricular arrhythmias is one that is not well understood. Patients with the same cardiac substrate and who have premature ventricular contractions, also known as PVCs, have the same substrate and PVCs for a long period of time, but they don't always induce ventricular arrhythmias. So the temporal risk is something that was very interesting to us. Using a chronically infarcted porcine model, we examined how sympathetic stimulation modulated propagation in the peri-infarct zone. We used a high-resolution multi-electrode array to map the anteroapical wall of the porcine heart, and we stimulated the left and right stellate ganglia, which, as we will later discuss, innervate different regions of the heart. This was done in vivo with an intact autonomic nervous system. In normal hearts, we show that the region that we mapped was under the control of the right stellate ganglion more so than the left stellate ganglion. And we showed this by documenting that activation recovery intervals, also known as ARIs, shortened more in the anteroapical region that we mapped with RSGS compared to LSGS. In addition, when we looked at conduction velocity, we found that longitudinal conduction velocity was modulated or increased by RSGS, but not LSGS. In infarcted hearts, however, we first of all found that the left stellate ganglion had more of an effect in the similar region mapped than in control animals. We found that right stellate ganglion stimulation, RSGS, decreased mean activation time, but more importantly, it modulated the activation times spatially inhomogeneously. What I mean by that is that some sites showed improved activation or shorter activation times, while other sites showed activation delay during right stellate ganglion stimulation. We then show that properties of the peri-infarct zone, which suggest putative ventricular tachycardia circuits, such as a late potential, could be modulated by sympathetic stimulation.
Thank you, Olu. I think it might be helpful if we talked a little bit about the role of sympathetic stimulation on electrophysiological properties in the normal heart, and also this concept of functional innervation from the right stellate versus the left stellate. Christian, can you explain to us a little bit about what is known in the normal heart in terms of the impact of sympathetic stimulation and stimulation of the right side versus the left side?
Yes, Crystal, thank you so much. First of all, I would like to congratulate Olu, his co-workers, and the whole group being involved in this study. Their inspiring and impressive findings have resulted in novel insights into the mechanism of ventricular arrhythmogenesis. B2B changes within the activity of the autonomic nervous system of the heart and its impact on ventricular electrophysiology are known for more than a century. Sympathetic activation from the neuroaxis modulates ventricular electrophysiology by shortening refractory periods, changing action potential duration, increasing dispersion of refractoriness, heterogeneity of repolarization, and the amplitude of early after depolarizations. Noteworthy, nerves from both sides are intertwined at the base of the heart, interacting with intracardiac neurons and transverse down to the apex with lateral specificity. The right stellate ganglion innervates predominantly the anterior part of the heart and the left the posterior part, resulting in an extensive network of large and delicate intracardiac nerve fibers that are modulated by several stages within the neural axis. The right stellate ganglion has been found to predominantly innervate the sinus node and therefore modulating heart rate and sinus nodal function in particular.
In normal hearts, right stellate ganglion stimulation increased longitudinal CV. This effect could be blocked by either esmolol, a beta blocker, or carbinoxolone, a gap junction uncoupler, which indicates that the increase in conduction velocity seen in the present study is mediated through beta adrenergic effect on gap junctions. Olu, would you care to speculate on the underlying mechanisms that might be governing this observation?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question, Crystal. Gap junctions are known to be a dynamic target of beta adrenergic activation, and this could occur via accumulation of gap junctions at the intercalated disc, increased gap junction expression, likely on a short to intermediate term timescale, as well as increased permeability or conductance of the gap junction itself. This increased permeability or conductance may occur via cyclic AMP protein kinase A mediated phosphorylation of connexin 43. There is a large amount of evidence from in vitro preparations that gap junction function can be modulated by beta adrenergic activation on both short and long timescales. However, this had not been shown in vivo in a beating heart.
Going back to this topic of laterality of innervation, in control hearts, we've discussed that in the recording site, right stellate stimulation seemed to have a stronger effect than left. However, following myocardial infarction, left stellate stimulation had a stronger effect at the recording site than it did in control hearts. Olu, can you elaborate on what might be going on here?
It is known that following myocardial infarction, there is sprouting seen in the peri-infarct zone. And perhaps this might be driven mostly by the left stellate ganglion, since the territory of the right stellate ganglion was what was injured by the myocardial infarction in this model. It is possible that nerves from the territory of the left stellate ganglion sprouted over to the territory of the infarction, or this may occur at the level of the intrinsic cardiac nervous system, where cardiac ganglia that control the territory that was not infarcted now mediate electrical control of the peri-infarct zone.
So one of the most interesting and surprising results of this study was that following myocardial infarction, in some cases, sympathetic stimulation actually prolonged activation times and slowed conduction in the peri-infarct zone. This is a fascinating result. Olu, what are some of the possible explanations for this somewhat paradoxical finding?
Sympathetic nerves release a number of neuropeptides. However, the types of neuropeptides that are released following myocardial infarction may change in response to injury. In addition, in the peri-infarct zone, nerve sprouts are heterogeneous. What can happen as a result of this is that some areas in the peri-infarct zone may see a lot of neurotransmitter release, while other regions may not see much. As a result, following sympathetic stimulation, some areas may increase in conduction velocity, while other areas that essentially do not see any neurotransmitter may change or have a paradoxical slowing due to possible cholinergic innervation in that area. What may also be responsible for what we observed could be at the myocyte level. It is known that myocytes and fibroblasts can couple to each other And how this occurs in the border zone may create paradoxical responses to sympathetic stimulation.
Olu, do you have anything else to add on these clinical implications of these findings?
One of the most important points of this paper is that the peri-infarct zone, where we search for potential ventricular tachycardia circuits, are dynamic. In one situation, the same region could be mapped with no potential ventricular tachycardia circuits identified. However, once the autonomic nervous system, particularly the sympathetic nervous system, is modulated, the situation could completely change, whereby additional or new potential circuits are identified.
One of the most interesting findings in this study was the modulation of late potentials during sympathetic stimulation. Christian, can you maybe comment on some of the implications of that finding?
This is really impressive. We have to keep in mind that late potentials and its abolishment during ablation has been found to significantly improve the outcome of the patients. If we keep in mind the dynamic nature even of this endpoint during the ablation itself, we really have to rethink our mapping technique. What Olu and his co-workers nicely demonstrated is that functional block within areas being related to slow conduction can be found with respect to sympathetic stimulation, and that this sympathetic activation can change the presence and the conduction in areas where late potential has been located. And finally, this might translate to novel ablation approaches regarding patients with ischemic heart disease and ventricular arrhythmias.
Well, I would like to thank Olu and Christian for taking part in this discussion today. I think we've had a very interesting discussion that has spanned all the way from basic fundamental mechanisms up to clinical translation and how these findings might be relevant. So I thank you both for your discussion today and look forward to more exciting work in this area.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.